Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Wednesday, July 22nd, 2015. I've watched the videotape from the dash cam in the traffic stop of Sandra Bland in Texas. And I am outraged.
Hey, Mr. Policeman, I don't want no trouble. I just want to drop my jiggle down to the floor. Hey, Mr. Policeman, why you want to holler at me? I just want to drop my jiggle down to the floor. No arrest but my mind jabbers.
No arrest but my mind jabbers.
No arrest but my mind jabbers.
The traffic stop that led to the detention of Sandra Bland, who reputedly committed suicide while in police custody in Waller County, Texas, raises a lot of important questions. And there are deep concerns that this videotape has been edited before it was released. We'll get to that. But the tape itself is quite damning. We learn the identity of the Texas State Trooper who made the traffic stop, Brian Encinia. And when you watch the video, and I strongly encourage every one of my listeners to take the time, the version that I've seen is 7 or 8 minutes long. And it's shocking. Because Sandra Bland is a woman who knew her rights, and she asserted them. And I believe this state trooper created a confrontation and escalated it well beyond any rational basis. So the tape was released by authorities in Texas, and it provokes comments from people like State Senator Royce West. Sandra Bland never should have been taken into custody. A state representative, Helen Giddings of Dallas, this young woman should be alive today. Now, as you may know, she's from Chicago, Sandra Bland. She went to school at Prairie View A&M University, which is in Waller County, and she was returning to that place in Texas to take a job. By all accounts, she was upbeat, excited about this. Then she was pulled over for failing to signal a lane change. And in the exchange with the cop that's caught on this dash cam video, we hear her explain that she pulled over because there was a cop on her tail, and she thought he wanted her out of the way so he could go somewhere else. And she was surprised when, instead, he pulled her over and issued a written warning. So the videotape begins, and there clearly was a sequence that is not part of this tape. The initial stop where he gets her license, goes back to his car, writes up this warning ticket. And then we see the sequence as he returns to her car with his ticket pad out. And he said, "You seem very irritated," to her. And so, sensing that, you know, he was willing to have a conversation, Sandra Bland responded, "Well, I am. I really am." And she said that, you know, she got pulled over, doesn't understand why she's getting a ticket. And then, in a testy way, he says, "You mind putting out your cigarette?" And Bland said, "I'm in my own car. I don't have to put out my cigarette." And then he told her to get out of the car. And at this point, I sensed that she went into a kind of routine that a black person would experience, given what they know about how police treat black people. And she refused to get out of the car, and she correctly told him that she wasn't under arrest. He had not told her she was under arrest, and therefore she did not have to get out of the car. Because when you get out of the car, bad things can happen. And Sandra Bland was aware enough to know that. So, what is astounding is that the officer wrestles with Sandra Bland, and then he threatens to use his taser. He pulls it out of the holster. He points it at her, and he says, "I'm going to light you up." And that's not the only unprofessional thing that he did. So as the sequence continues, Bland does get out of the car under protest. At this point, she's peppering him with all kinds of comments. She's dropping some F-bombs. Then he escalates even further. And to do that, he took her out of the range of this fixed camera on the dashboard of the police cruiser. Now, maybe he thought he was being clever and that the videotape wouldn't capture what he was about to do. If so, he's a dumb shit because his microphone was working. And despite the fact that this tape may have been edited, we hear a lot of very damaging comments from Officer Encina as he continues to escalate with Sandra Bland. So he takes her out of the camera range. He handcuffs her. She complains that that hurts her and he may have broken her wrist or arm. Next thing we know, they're on the ground and we hear her clearly saying, "You just slammed my head into the ground. I can't hear." And she complained again that her arm hurt. Moments later, after he has called for backup, a female police officer arrives, and she immediately takes Officer Encina's side of the story. And as Bland tries to tell her, "Look, this guy just slammed my head into the ground, and by the way, I've got epilepsy." To which Trooper Encina uttered a single word. He said, "Good." So he exposed himself as an unprofessional man who doesn't deserve to wear a law enforcement uniform. He has no business being involved in a situation like this. Yes, Sandra Bland was mouthing off. But if I were in her position, I don't know that I would have been able to resist doing the same thing. And 3 days later, Sandra Bland was found dead in her cell with a plastic trash bag wrapped over her head. This is still considered suspicious by family members and people who knew Sandra Bland. And I'm inclined to join their camp until we have proof otherwise. Now, Vice News has done a good job of taking apart the videotape that was released by the Texas Department of Public Safety. And they cite a number of people who've commented, like this one is a tweet, "I edit footage for a living. Anyone can see this official video has been cut." And there are examples in the Vice story. I'll link to it so you can look at the video frames for yourself. But in one sequence, they show that a guy walks through the frame and then he does the same thing twice. And that does appear to be a loop. And you have to ask what is being covered up by the repeat of that footage. So I can't say definitively that the tape was doctored, but the allegation is out there. There is evidence to support that notion. And here in California, our legislature has put two bills on the governor's desk, one that makes it legal for citizens to videotape police encounters as long as they're not interfering with the officers, and the other makes it a crime to doctor or manipulate a police evidence videotape. I think both of those are wise moves. But the bottom line here is that we need to reform police operations in this country. We've reached a very extreme point where officers operate with impunity well above and beyond the law. And they often get away with it. The introduction of these cameras is something that is helping, but we know that cameras don't always equate to justice. I think we're going to have to fight for it in memory of Sandra Bland. Now we have the latest police shooting of an unarmed black man. And the tally so far this year, 637 Americans have been killed by police, 84 in the month of July alone. Number 83 occurred in Cincinnati, my hometown. A University of Cincinnati campus cop pulled over Samuel DeBose because DeBose was missing his front license plate on the car. Now, they say this occurred at the edge of the University of Cincinnati campus. And questions immediately surface for me. Why is this campus cop doing traffic citations? And why is he packing a loaded firearm? Because as the officer stopped him, The cop says DuBose refused to provide a driver's license and instead pulled out a bottle, an alcohol bottle. It's not clear whether it was full or empty. Not clear what he was trying to do with it. And that he refused to get out of the car. Now, once again, you are within your rights, if you have not been told you're under arrest, to stay in your car during a traffic stop. Most cops prefer that. They tell you don't get out of the car. And these are based on safety considerations and policies in policing. So, I don't know why DuBose refused to show his license and refused to get out of the car. But a struggle ensued, and the officer, Ray Tensing, pulled out his firearm, shot this man once in the head, and he was declared dead at the scene. So this pattern plays out on almost a daily basis in this country, sometimes twice a day. What will it take for our political leaders, for the law enforcement community, to police itself? And in calling out bad cops, I'm also calling out good cops. Because I know there are good cops, there are good people, men and women in law enforcement in this country. But you need to purge your ranks of the bad guys. And that means you have to end the blue silence. The I shall not stitch rule. I think I meant to say snitch. I shall not snitch. Because just like prison inmates who know that snitching can get you killed, cops do not turn in bad cops. And it is this enabling that has to come to an end. And I hope that this Encinia guy is tried and convicted for his inappropriate use of his authority in the traffic stop with Sandra Bland. But it won't bring back her life. It won't fix what has happened. I hope we can really address these problems because people are dying, like I said, every day, if not more than one each day. Last night, a couple of lame ducks entertained me on basic cable. Jon Stewart, who is in his final 3 weeks as host of The Daily Show, was joined by Barack Obama, who's in the last 18 months of his service as President of the United States. And overall, you know, there were some funny lines, and Obama really showed himself to be, you know, pretty comfortable in his role as the president these days. And his main purpose was to talk about the Iran deal. And, you know, I support the president on that. It's not something that I have contention with him about. But the interview didn't talk about Sandra Bland. Didn't talk about race relations in this country with the first black president. Didn't talk about Charleston. Didn't talk about Chattanooga. They talked a little bit about the war in the Middle East. And Stewart and Obama kind of shared an awkward laugh over who we're going to bomb next. I thought that was pretty tasteless. But like many interviewers, Jon Stewart can fire up a good question, but he rarely demands an actual answer to that question. And that's too bad. Every day I like to thank the people who support my work at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. People like Carl Howard, Jeff Zeiser, Deborah Kennedy, they're monthly subscribers, and I'd like to invite you to join them. Come on over to peterbcollins.com. You click on the link under my picture that says sign up, and the next page, you can choose $5, $10, $20 a month. You can make a one-time contribution. My P.O. box is there if you want to send a check instead of using PayPal. And our best deal is that $50 annual subscription. New annual subscribers anywhere within the sound of my voice earn a bonus gift, a copy of Pepe Escobar's ebook edition of Empire of Chaos. Yesterday, on Capitol Hill, the Republican-controlled Congress took a little break from its constant obstruction of any meaningful effort at immigration reform. And they took a break to exploit, in a cynical and calculated way, the recent shooting death of a woman in San Francisco named Kate Steinle. Maybe you know that Kate was walking on a pier on the waterfront on a warm evening, July 3rd, with her dad. And a shot rang out, the bullet hit her, and she died in her father's arms. It's sad, it's tragic, it's pointless. And it turns out the weapon used had been stolen from a federal officer, stolen from his car parked in San Francisco. And the story is, we have no proof of this, but the alleged shooter told a TV reporter that he found the gun wrapped up in a T-shirt and just started firing, just for fun. And one of those bullets took the life of Kate Steinle. Now this undocumented immigrant is being demonized. He had 7 felony counts on his record, 5 of which were for trying to enter the United States illegally. And he's become a political football. And the right-wingers on Capitol Hill trotted out Jim Steinle to testify in support of Ted Cruz's new feel-good law called Kate's Law. And it would require a 5-year minimum mandatory sentence for anyone convicted, like this guy Lopez Sanchez. Now, this, of course, flies past the basic facts. Lopez Sanchez had no history of violence. As I said, 5 of his 7 felony convictions were for immigration issues. He had just completed a lengthy stretch in an immigration prison in Southern California. And 4 times previously, when he completed a term like that, they deported him back to Mexico. This time, they sent him to San Francisco because there was a 20-year-old warrant on a $20 marijuana buy from an undercover cop. When he got to San Francisco, the district attorney flushed out that case. There was no basis for it, no evidences left. And then the sheriff released him. Dianne Feinstein and the Judiciary Committee joined the chorus in pointing the finger at San Francisco Sheriff Ross Mercurimi. He's the whipping boy for this, and I don't believe it's his fault. He executed the policy of the city of San Francisco not to collaborate with the Immigration Service on petty criminals and deport them. And that's what he did. And now, because of the tragic sequence of events, this is all being rewritten, that there was this gruesome immigrant who is out there raping and shooting people, like Donald Trump says. And this hearing was more polite than Donald Trump. But it's the same mentality. It feeds on jingoism, on racism, on immigrant bashing. And the very people who scream the loudest are the ones who block any meaningful effort to address these problems. The hypocrisy is simply stunning. The opportunism, quite obvious. Well, in Rome, at the Vatican, there is this confab underway about climate change. And my Governor Moonbeam, Jerry Brown, was front and center yesterday, issuing some powerful, if not thundering, commentary. And I fully agree with what Jerry Brown had to say. He warns that climate change could lead to extinction of human life on the planet. And he said we're going to have to set a clear goal, one that is almost unimaginable. He said 1/3 of the oil that we know exists as reserves can never be taken out of the ground. 50% of the gas can never be used, and over 90% of the coal. Well, Jerry Brown is right about that. He's also right when he said that he urged the attendees to light a fire under their own country's leaders. He took aim at opponents, saying they were bamboozling the public with well-financed disinformation. Quote, "We have very powerful opposition that, in at least my country, spends billions on trying to keep people out of office, such as yourselves, and elect troglodytes and other deniers of the obvious science." Now, this is strong language, and I agree with everything Jerry Brown says. And I say, Governor Brown, you must listen to your own words. Because you may not know this, but California is the 3rd biggest oil producer in the United States. We are outranked only by Texas and now North Dakota. And despite all that oil production, the stuff that Jerry says should remain in the ground, well, he has refused to ban fracking here in California. He has allowed some modest regulation of the process, but from the groundwater tainting to the seismic impact to the very issue that he raised, that this oil should not ever be used because it will help kill the planet. Governor Brown, listen to what Governor Brown has to say. And pay attention, will you? Outside California, I'm not sure how many people know who Gavin Newsom is. He's now the lieutenant governor, and in 2004, he was the San Francisco mayor who opened the floodgates to same-sex marriage. Newsom is likely to run to succeed Jerry Brown in a couple of years. And he's currently keeping busy, because his job as lieutenant governor doesn't demand much, hosting a series of forums across the state, trying to write a good marijuana legalization package of laws. These will likely go on the ballot for November 2016 consideration by voters. And I applaud what Newsom is doing. I know him a little bit. He's told me he doesn't like pot, never smoked it, not his thing. But he recognizes that it's going to be legal, just like Colorado, Washington State, and most recently Oregon, and he wants to get it right. And I think this is excellent. One of the recommendations of his task force is not to allow big tobacco or other big corporate interests to dominate the weed industry in California. The model is microbreweries, they say. And I think that is very healthy. He wants to permit drug felons, people who were arrested for drug violations, including marijuana in the past, to be able to work in the industry. They're talking about not overtaxing the product and not pricing it too high to avoid creating a black market. And a friend recently bought some weed up in Washington State and reported to me that based on the price per gram, including the 45% tax, I think it is, that Washington State imposes, the price is about $500 an ounce. And here in California, you can get really top-quality weed for about $200 an ounce. So that disparity could drive a black market despite the legalization. They're also wrestling with how to treat the tax money that will be generated, what to do about medical marijuana, about people driving under the influence, and about the thorny issues related to the federal government and the banking system. So I think it's a really thoughtful approach. And I've talked to some people in the cannabis industry. They don't like everything about the elements of this package, but they do respect that it is a very intelligent approach to these complicated issues. Remember Rod Blagojevich? Yeah, the guy with the big floppy hair, big smile, big bullshitter. He was the governor of Illinois, and he's been in prison the last few years, the fourth governor of Illinois to be behind bars in the last 20 years. And he, of course, was convicted of various schemes to profit from his power to appoint Barack Obama's replacement in the United States Senate after Obama was elected president in 2008. And he got caught red-handed, telling friends, this is golden, and, I'm going to get everything I can out of it. Well, a federal appeals court has overturned five counts that he was convicted under. And these relate to an effort that he floated to exchange an appointment to Obama's cabinet for nominating Obama's good friend and now top presidential advisor, Valerie Jarrett, to Obama's Senate seat from Illinois. And interestingly, the appeals court ruled that this was not a crime. It wasn't bribery. It was called political log rolling. So you can trade a Senate seat appointment for a better job for yourself, you just can't sell it. Okay. The New York Times, echoing your humble host, has a powerful editorial today, slamming those who are trying to take down Planned Parenthood. And yes, this is a concerted national effort. It's been a wish of the Republican right wing for a long time. The second, manipulated videotape, heavily edited, was released by the so-called Center for Medical Progress, a phony nonprofit that exists only to work on this effort to delegitimize Planned Parenthood. And this second video is predictably embarrassing, talking about the potential sale or transfer of fetal tissue taken from aborted fetuses. And from Rush Limbaugh to members of the U.S. Senate and governors, they're all piling on. Rand Paul of Kentucky has pledged to introduce an amendment to a pending Senate bill to immediately strip every dollar of Planned Parenthood funding. Now, this is all so misguided, because all of the federal money that goes to Planned Parenthood goes for contraception and women's health screenings like cervical cancer, breast cancer. And so they're saying that to score political points, they're willing to eliminate a major service center for women's health issues in this country. And don't bother them with the fact that not one federal dollar supports the abortion services offered by Planned Parenthood. That doesn't matter. It's a juicy target to feed the evangelical base, and that's what they're doing. So you got Ted Cruz called for an investigation and defunding. Governor Greg Abbott of Texas and Governor Bobby Jindal of Louisiana have ordered investigations. And this is all trumped up. It's totally contrived. Where are the Democrats? Where are the defenders of Planned Parenthood? This New York Times editorial is really the first, beyond my own comments, that I have seen about this. The editorial sums it up this way. This video campaign is a dishonest attempt to make legal, voluntary, and potentially life-saving tissue donations appear nefarious and illegal. Lawmakers responding by promoting their own anti-choice agenda are rewarding deception and putting women's health and their constitutionally protected rights at risk. Here in California, we've had a spate of wildfires that's aggravated by all of the dry terrain here because of our drought. And almost every time we hear accounts of efforts to push back a wildfire, we're hearing that there are amateur pilots who fly their drones to get pictures of these dramatic blazes. And it's reached the point where the aerial firefighters, planes and helicopters, have had to suspend operations when there were drones flying in the area because they thought they might end up having an accident. Now, I'm a little bit curious because if, for example, a twin-engine or a four-engine firefighting plane that carries, you know, thousands of gallons of water, if it collided with one of these plastic drones that weighs, what, about 8 or 10 pounds at the most, has a camera on it, I don't really see that that would cause the big plane to fall out of the sky. But they're so worried about it that that's, as a precaution, they take their planes out of the air when they spot these drones. And I think that, you know, there are a couple of different ways to deal with this. One is that they could jam the radio controls of the drone and just cause it to crash. The other is they could shoot it out of the sky. But we're talking about more ordinary means. The discussion is to pass laws to increase penalties for people who interfere with firefighters by playing with their drones. And finally today, I'm delighted to report that the Chinese artist Ai Weiwei has regained control of his passport. Authorities in Beijing took it away back in 2011, and he hasn't been able to leave the country. Last year, he staged an impressive exhibit at Alcatraz, the former prison on an island in San Francisco Bay. I was very impressed, where he depicted all of the political prisoners currently being detained around the world on a tapestry made entirely of plastic Legos. Quite imaginative, very powerful. And so I'm delighted to see that this man, who has a lot to tell the world about being a political prisoner, about experiencing the kind of retribution that is visited on people in China who dissent. Well, he's now waiting to see if he can get a visa so that he can be reunited with his wife and son who've been living in Germany for the last year. And I hope he gets it, and I hope he gets to travel freely. Thanks for joining me today for my news and comment. This is the free podcast that you're authorized to share with absolutely everyone. Go ahead, put it up on Facebook, tweet it out to your friends. I'll be much obliged. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.